I never knew how lucky I got when I met you. I was scared of feeling this love I know is true. Good evening and welcome to Outbeat Collage. I'm Michaela Kennan. Today we're glad you're with us here to cap off a Sunday evening and spend the rest of the next hour listening to the best of LGBT programming coming to you from right here in the North Bay. Sunbell is with me tonight as co-host. I've got Mary Moore Campagna on the engineering boards. We've two great guests lined up for the evening, and we're all making our way together right here, right now on Outbeat Radio. Stay with us.
Today it became so clear. I know it's gonna be alright. I know it's gonna be alright today. Today, let go of those fears. I know I'm gonna see the light. I know I'm gonna see the light of day. The sun comes up, love falls in, take me away. The sun goes down with love all around, here to stay. I make my day any way I want to. I'm on my
And welcome back. I'm Sun Bell, sitting in for Gary Carnevale, who's celebrating his birthday this weekend. Happy birthday! It's fantabulous to be back behind the mic. You heard Austin Marola opening up our show with Today from his brand new release entitled Real. And tonight we'll be talking with local author Kenna Lee, here to share her views on being green, motherhood, saving the planet, and A Million Tiny Things, which also happens to be the name of her new book. Plus, I'll be speaking with Emily Webster, who's here to tell us about the first ever LGBT dance social coming up in just about a month at the Sebastopol Area Senior Center. Let's get started with the Outbeat News and calendar. Sitting in for Greg Maraglia. It's a mouthful. Maraglia, here's McCalla.
Thanks, son. Good evening. This is the Outbeat Radio News for Sunday, July 15th, 2012. On Monday, the Global Commission on HIV and the Law released its first report, Risks, Rights, and Health. This landmark report details the role human rights violations and discriminatory laws play in driving the HIV epidemic in countries around the world, particularly for marginalized populations such as LGBT people, migrants, and sex workers. The report acknowledges that the practice of writing, passing, and enforcing laws can seem abstract and distant, but as many people living with HIV know all too well, the law is neither abstract nor distant. It directly shapes the circumstances in which people live their daily lives, and it too often hurts more than it helps. The authors of the report, one of which includes U.S. Representative Barbara Lee, the most pro-LGBT member of Congress, describe being frequently overwhelmed by how archaic, insensitive laws are violating human rights, challenging rational public health responses, and eroding social fabric. The commission heard from more than 1,000 people in over 140 countries, including many of the 78 countries that criminalize homosexuality and many countries with laws that prohibit and punish gender nonconformity. Laws that dehumanize and criminalize LGBT people, sex workers, and those living with HIV cannot stop AIDS. The report emphasizes that the most effective laws for combating the spread of HIV are not based on repression and discrimination. Rather, they are laws that explicitly protect the human rights of people living with HIV and groups of people at high risk of contracting the virus. Other major recommendations include: amend non-discrimination laws to include protections on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity, to remove legal barriers to the formation of community groups by or for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people, and men who have sex with men, to ensure that transgender people can access identity documents that affirm their gender without requiring medical procedures such as sterilization or sex reassignment surgery, and finally, to ensure that all people have access to comprehensive, affordable, and affirming health care services, including HIV prevention, testing, and treatment services. In Washington, with a few months remaining in the 112th Congress and a few weeks until lawmakers adjourn for the August recess, advocates say that the chances for advancing any pro-LGBT legislation, even in the Democratic-controlled Senate, are slim, at least before Election Day. Michael Cole Schwartz, spokesperson for the Human Rights Campaign, expressed the sentiment that progress on pro-LGBT bills is unlikely in Congress anytime soon. He says, "Obviously, the calendar is tight, with only 7 legislative weeks between now and the election. Further, as summer rolls on, it begins to get harder and harder to get much done on Capitol Hill." Still, Cole Schwartz says the HRC will look to see what can be accomplished in the lame duck session and push to include LGBT provisions on any major tax bill or other omnibus spending package that comes to the floor. Few had expected pro-LGBT legislation to move through the House while Republicans remain in control of the chamber, although some progress was made on bills in the Senate, including Employment Non-Discrimination Act, the Domestic Partnership and Benefits Obligations Act, and the Respect for Marriage Act, all leading to hopes that more progress could be made in at least one chamber of Congress. On ENDA, which would bar job discrimination against LGBT people in the workplace, the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee held a historic hearing last month featuring the first ever testimony from an openly transgender person before the Senate. Earlier in the Congress, the DPO bill, which would extend health and pension benefits to partners of federal workers, and the RMA, which would repeal the Defense of Marriage Act, were reported out of their respective committees of jurisdiction. But even these bills may not advance. A Senate Democratic aide, speaking on condition of anonymity, said it was unlikely that Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, Democrat Nevada, would schedule time for votes on these bills before Election Day. He left the door open for the possibility of them being tacked on to larger legislation, however, coming to the floor. A new political action committee backed by actress Jane Lynch and tennis icon Billie Jean King launched today with a goal of increasing the clout of lesbians and candidates who champion their causes. LPAC's goal is to raise $1 million to help elect pro-lesbian, pro-women candidates in the 2012 elections. The Huffington Post reports that the group has raised $200,000. This year, we have seen politicians repeatedly support policies that harm women, Lynch said in a statement. It is important to me to elect leaders who care about issues that impact women and their families. That's why I support LPAC. The organization says it will support candidates regardless of their party affiliation, gender, or sexual orientation, as long as they support these issues: 1. Ending discrimination against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender communities; 2. Protecting access to reproductive freedom and health care; and 3. Furthering social, racial, and economic justice. There are other groups devoted to gay rights issues that are politically active or outspoken in their advocacy, such as the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund and the Human Rights Campaign. LPAC says it is the first group of its kind to target itself specifically to lesbians. Besides the support of King and Lynch, LPAC's advisory board includes Laura Ricketts, a part owner of the Chicago Cubs and a top fundraiser for President Obama. Urvashi Ved, a former executive director of the National Gay Lesbian Task Force, is also a board member. That's the news for now. Here's your LGBT calendar of events.
And so for this week's upcoming events, Monday, July 16th at 7 to 8:30 p.m., Jesse's parent support group will meet at Positive Images at 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. This parent support group is led by Jesse, who speaks both English and Spanish. All parents are welcome. Tuesday, July 17th, from 6 to 7:30 p.m., trans group will happen at Positive Images. Trans-identified and questioning individuals and their families and friends are invited. Thursday, July 19th, from 7 to 9 p.m., Men for Men support group will take place at Marin AIDS Project at 910 Irwin Street in San Rafael. The ongoing support group for gay men offers a sense of community in a safe and supportive environment. For more information, contact Mark at 415-753-2007. Friday, July 20th at 10:30 a.m. to noon, the Sonoma Valley Seniors Group will meet at Vintage House Senior Center at 264 First Street in Sonoma. The Spectrum Group meets for lively discussions, mutual support, and sharing information. For more information, contact Gary at 707-583-2330 or email him at gary@spectrumlgbtcenter.org. Saturday, July 21st, from 10 to 5 p.m., Food for Thought food drives will happen at Sonoma Market. Both the Sebastopol and Guerneville Safeways and the Bicentennial Lucky in Santa Rosa. And on Sunday, July 22nd, Belle the Cat will be playing at the Occidental Center for the Arts from 4 to 6 p.m. And I'd love to see you there. That's my duo. For more LGBT news, go to www.outbeatradio.org.
Now go to sleep, count your sheep, dream away, tomorrow's another day. I'll tuck your toes and kiss your nose, then hug you tight, my little guiding light. Is your lullaby, so don't you cry. I'll never go, 'cause you know I love you, 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 I love you. Soon you'll be dreaming.
And that was Austin Merola once again, this time with Lullaby. Aptly chosen as I introduce our first guest here on Outbeat Collage. I'm Michaela Kennan, by the way, and with me in studio is Kenna Lee, author of A Million Tiny Things. I would say a delightful, humorous, deeply relevant read, chronicling her philosophical determination to live the green life, all the while finding her values and daily choices competing for attention as she navigates a demanding sea of domesticity, i.e. motherhood, kids, and family life. She is well-spoken, she's right on, she's very personal and very poignant in her observations about the world we're living in today. Kenna, welcome to Outbeat Collage.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very, very welcome. I've got your book right in front of me. Right off the bat, just introduce us to your family. As you call them in the book, share a little bit about each one of them.
So in the book, I introduce my three children, and they are not only in the book, they are the book, or they're the reason for the book. But my oldest one is the percussionist, and he is a lively drummer and continues to be so. He was at that time. They're all 3 years older than they were at the end of the narrative span of the book itself. And the next down in line is called Mowgli in the book, in reference to the main character from Jungle Book, because he is a little bit wild and sometimes hard to tame.
Semi-feral, as you say.
Yes. And then my daughter is called Bright Eyes, and the book starts with her birth and follows her first 3 years as I come to terms with the fact that I've chosen to have a third child, which was not my original plan, nor my domestic partner's original plan. My domestic partner taking the title of the pragmatist in the book, because she usually was the one to pull me back down to earth when I would think, well, we can just live off the grid.
Not so easy. At that point, we do enter your life just about the time that your daughter's going to be born. You have what I call your ecological angst that's raging in the midst of all of this. You write, I wanted number three more than I wanted to feel good about my choices. So talk to us more about that inner dialogue between wanting this third child, honoring your own inner desires, but still having values that you want to uphold.
Right. So the pragmatist and I had decided that we were each going to give birth to one child. And that was because we didn't want to contribute to overpopulation, and with the full knowledge that we're middle-class Americans and we didn't want to add too many more middle-class Americans to this planet, knowing that middle-class Americans tend to overconsume more than our share of the Earth's resources. So we've gone into motherhood, mutual motherhood, with that goal in mind, each giving birth once. And she gave birth first, and then I gave birth. And when I was pregnant with my son, I just was sad. I was just sad. And it had been really hard for us to get pregnant. And then the pragmatist, poor thing, she's like, you can't be sad. You're supposed to be happy. And I just wanted to, I just thought, this can't be the only time I'm going to have this experience. And then I gave birth and came back down off the hormones. But it stuck with me so strongly in my heart that all the things I was trying to do of, you know, growing a garden and driving less and, you know, making sure I was informed about not using plastic, all that stuff faded underneath this just intense, biologically driven desire to have another child. And I wrestled with it a lot, and the pragmatist helped me wrestle with it a lot. And but I'm a little bit more, as you say, ecologically angst filled than a lot of people. So you know, she was just like, look, one more child is not going to cause the entire world to blow up. You know, like, that's one more child is not going to, you know, be the tipping point at which global warming becomes, you know, something that kills the human race. So, so I did it. And I, you know, it's one of those things you can never regret when you've looked at your child's face and you fall in love with that person. You think, how could this world ever exist without this person? So I'm thrilled that I had her. And at the same time, when I did have her, I felt this very intense weight of having departed from the values and choices that I thought were right for the earth. And I thought, you know, I've got to now do more, because I went off the path. Now I've got to find my way back to the path. And that's a lot of what the book is about, is looking for that path again when I've strayed off of it.
Were you looking to have a little girl?
You know, it's funny. She asks me that all the time. You wanted a little girl, didn't you? And of course, not of course. I know some women that don't want a little girl, but I definitely was thrilled that she was a daughter. I had two boys. I was very accepting of the fact that choosing to have a third child would probably be another boy. And I love my sons. They're a ton of fun, but it was an extra thrill when we had an ultrasound and they said she was a girl. I was like, no, I'm not going to believe it till she comes out. You know, can't get my hopes up for that. So then when she came out, I was very thrilled to have a daughter. And at the same time, raising a woman in this world is a challenge. So
that just took you into a whole different dimension, you know, as you relate in the book, that all of a sudden you begin to ponder this mother a girl thing. What does it mean to be the mother of a little girl and to bring up a little girl in our world today? Talk to us more about that.
Oh gosh, that's a subject for a whole nother book, probably, or many books by many mothers. For me, having a daughter was very different than having sons, and it was an unexpected difference. I thought it would be, you know, fun to have someone that I understood their experience a little bit more than how much I felt like I could understand what my boys' experience is being men in the world. But I was taken aback by how frightening it was on a visceral level to feel that I have to lead this girl safely, just bodily intact, keep her safe from all the physical harms that can come toward a woman in this society, and all the kind of a greater thing, the psychological harms that can come to a woman in this society. You know, the magazines that are on every newsstand, I became so sensitive to seeing those airbrushed women's bodies and their faces and thinking, this is the world she's growing up in. She thinks she's supposed to look like that instead of look like a real person. And how do you teach someone not to take on the skewed values of a dominant culture? And I don't have the answer to that other than, you know, modeling myself and finding other women who can model for her being strong and independent in our bodies. And, you know, she is 6 years old now, and she is very strong and independent in her body. And she watched our chickens not too long ago. We were watching the chickens run around, and we had gotten a rooster, and the rooster was doing his business. And she looked right at me and she said, "No one is ever going to make me do sex." I just thought, right on. Okay, so we're doing something right here. So.
Very good. Very good. So, three kids, you move into the minivan stage of your life, and even that was worthy of some angst.
Oh, definitely, definitely, because cars are such a big symbol of the way we as middle-class Americans and as an industrialized society, the ways in which we overconsume and the ways in which we waste the resources of this world unnecessarily. And so I had, for long before I had children, very much driven, you know, the most fuel-efficient car that I could find, and which saved me a lot of money over many years, I'm sure. And then had moved into the, okay, now I'm going to get it. I convert a Mercedes to veggie oil and drive without any gasoline at all. And I'm not enough of a mechanic to have made that work out too well for myself. But when the third child was on her way, it became clear that the car seats that were required for the three children were not going to fit in the back of my tiny little fuel-efficient car, and that I was going to be forced to make a different choice. So still hoping that I was going to be able to drive my veggie oil van Mercedes around, but even though it didn't work ever, I said, you know, the pragmatist was more like, this thing doesn't work and we need another solution. So went to the dealership and bought a minivan, and it was definitely a step across an abyss that I thought I would never cross. And I didn't really care whether I was looked cool. I don't really have that, like, oh no, I'm not cool because I drive a minivan. Like, I don't care if I'm cool, but I cared a lot that suddenly I was, you know, getting 19 miles per gallon instead of 40. So
sure.
It was a big shock to see how having made that choice to go off the path, it led to other choices that were taking me further off the path of trying to live on the earth the way that I wanted to live on it.
Your storytelling style is reflective. It's engaging. You do it with humor, but also with a very pure honesty about the challenges of staying true to your beliefs and your value systems, yet constantly having to renegotiate your relationship with all of that. Did you always have a sensitivity to the environment and ecological kinds of concerns, or did you grow into that?
I definitely grew into it. I have this, I keep reminding myself that sometime in middle school, I wrote a report about how wind power was going to save the earth. But I think then there was a period where I was just more concerned about whether, you know, I was going to get into the college I wanted and whether people liked me and all those things that, you know, teenage girls worry about. So I definitely was not at the top of my list until after college and was back. I was entering, I'd say, the kind of real world and having a greater understanding of how I was going to be building a life and that the choices I made in my life would have repercussions in other people's lives. And I had the privilege and very wonderful experience of being able to go live in India for a while.
Wow.
And working there in a very undeveloped part of the world and seeing the difference between the lifestyle I'd grown up in and the lifestyle of, I'd say at that point, the majority of the people on the planet, and seeing how different they were. So that was eye-opening for me.
You're also not afraid to wrestle with the questions that come with believing or not believing in what you call a particular God with a capitalized name. Have you found a comfortable place for yourself somewhere between those people of doubt that you write about and those people of faith?
I'm very fond of people of faith, but I would have to say that I'm probably still in the people of doubt camp. I think I would define myself as a seeker rather than as someone who has found. And that's an ongoing journey for myself and, of course, my family.
As a, now you self-proclaimed eco-wannabe, as you say, many of your million tiny things revolve around the ethical and moral obsession of balance. How do I balance out between what I should or should not be doing for the good of the planet, the good of myself, the good of my family? One example is, do I quit eating hamburger because hamburger comes from cows and cows produce methane gas and, you know, the earth gets warmer? Or do I buy plastic? Do I get rid of all plastic? You know, all of those dilemmas that you wrestle with in the book. Talk to us about, actually share that story about buying the $20 dozen of eggs and the free-range chicken.
Yes. So, at some point in my daughter's first 3 years, and fortunately I wrote it down because it's all a haze in my middle-aged brain. I was at the farmer's market with the kids and I was so thrilled that I'd found this farmer. It was like all these dilemmas that I've been facing at the grocery store of like, which eggs do I buy? And, you know, is it make that much difference whether they're free range or all natural or vegetarian fed or, you know, certified organic? Like, and does the certified organic eggs from further away, like, not as good as the all natural eggs that are close by? And, you know, it just felt like I couldn't figure out which choices were right. And I just wanted it all to look like what was in my children's little storybooks, where there was a farmer and there was chickens and eggs and the Berenstain Bears go to their farmer next door and get some eggs, you know?
Don't we all?
So, Yeah, so there I was at the farmer's market, and there was the farmer. You know, it's like the Berenstain Bears farmer. There he was in his overalls and his big smile, and he had this photo album of his happy chickens running around this lush grass that he has somewhere in West Marin. So excited. So I was like, I'll take a dozen eggs. And I took the eggs, and I shelled out this enormous amount of cash, but I was like, I feel good. You know, I feel good. So then I felt so good that I thought, I'll buy a chicken from him, you know. And I'll go home and we'll make this chicken. It'll be so delicious because we'll just feel so right, like all the stars are aligned and we're living on the earth the right way we're supposed to. So, you know, I felt like bells would ring as the chicken came out of the oven. But I said, do you have a chicken? And because he, you know, clearly had a cooler back there. And he said, I've got one left. And I was like, great. So he hands me the chicken and I hand him a $20 bill. And then he smiles at me and I smile at him. And I'm just like, okay, I'm waiting for my change. He doesn't seem to be getting my change. You know, waiting. We're talking. And I'm finally, while this awkward moment where I'm waiting for the change and he doesn't seem to be doing anything is going on, like my eyes wander over to the little chalkboard that said, you know, organic roasters, $5 a pound. And I looked at my chicken and it was a 4-pound chicken, and it's $5 a pound, 4-pound chicken. Oh, I see why he's not getting me any change. So I had this tiny little chicken. And I didn't have any more money in my pocket for the, you know, food that my children were inevitably going to beg for from me as soon as they found me again. And I walked around just ineptly wondering, it goes back to the same question of balance. Like, how do I feel good if feeling good means my pockets are empty? And, you know, that might be part of the answer, is that we need to find ways of living where we're not just trying to get more money so we can afford the expensive organic chicken. But in that moment, you know, I just felt so good. And then I felt so broke.
Yeah, I understand. So offer us some suggestions on how you've learned to prioritize your values, make responsible choices as best you can. And how can you help us to learn that as well?
Well, we're still all trying to figure it out every day, me and the kids. And one of the things that we do, which I do talk about in the book, is I hang my laundry up. And I wondered a lot whether that really makes a big difference. Yes, I'm not using natural gas and energy to dry my clothes. And it's a meditative activity. But I was lucky enough to read a book by Sandra Steingraber, which is called Raising Elijah. She's an environmentalist and a scientist, and she holds that out as one of the most meaningful things that we as parents can do to teach our children that there are options for, rather than just going along with, you know, what's expected. And reading her descriptions of fracking and the environmental destruction that that's causing, and then tying that into, you know what, I'm just going to hang my laundry instead of using gas to do it. Mm-hmm. So that's one example, and there's a lot more. I could go on forever, but
sure.
I think that's it's a very visible thing that you can do in your life to make you feel like you're making different choices.
Right. And we can go on and on. I hate to kind of wrap up the interview, but we're moving on quickly in the hour. Your website has a lot of resources that can help others make these decisions. So give us your website.
Yes, it's easy. It's www.milliontinythings.com.
Okay.
And if you Google Million Tiny Things or Kenna Lee, either one will come up.
Excellent. And a Facebook page, of course.
Facebook page, Kenna Lee.
Click like.
Yes, please. Click like.
Let's also mention that a portion of the proceeds from your book will help support Daily Acts. Tell us about Daily Acts.
Yes, Daily Acts is a wonderful organization here in Sonoma County that does environmental education and trainings and installations of permaculture and gray water systems and lots of things that help people understand that and implement doing things on a personal level that can make a big difference in their own impact on the earth, and also the ripples that go out when one person installs a gray water system, how their neighbors then learn, and their neighbors learn, and their neighbors learn. So it's very community-based, showing that what we do makes a difference and teaching us how to do the things that we can do to make a difference.
And it's a one by one. One tells one, and one tells one,
yes.
And one tells one.
Yeah.
Good.
So they have wonderful classes, and they're dailyacts.org.
Okay. Good. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being a model and sharing your angst and your inspirations and actually giving us some ideas to think about, too, when it comes to balancing our own values and making responsible choices. And I look forward to the next chapters over the years as you continue to grow and evolve, and keep up the good work, okay?
Thanks so much. I will.
All right, Kim. It's been a pleasure.
You want to run and hide? Know that I'm right by your side. You've got nothing left to lose. Just look inside of you. If you hit a wall, know that I'll catch a fall. I'm playing my guitar to remind you who you are. Ignite your light. It's time you shine.
Well, hello, welcome back to Outbeat Radio. I'm Sun Bell, and we're here with Emily Webster, who is going to be doing the first LGBT dance social at the Sebastopol Area Senior Center. So, Emily, welcome.
Thank you, and thanks for giving me this opportunity.
Absolutely. So, what brought this about?
Well, we have the Sebastopol Senior Center has wanted to reach out to the LGBT community. We do have many LGBT people coming to our center, and we know we wanted to do something to include them more and make them feel more welcome. And I was thinking of having educational programs. I did a little research work and found out there really wasn't a lot of resources. I, who spend a lot of time on the computer, mm-hmm. couldn't find a lot of resources and a lot of information. So I thought, gosh, somebody who's a lot older than me, who doesn't understand the computer as well as I do, might have a harder time finding resources. So I thought of having educational programs and offering resources. And then I don't know how it came about, but I was talking to someone, and they mentioned that there's nothing going on for the LGBT. I was talking to one of my friends, and I thought, well, we need to have a dance. So lots of enthusiasm we'd started a lot of enthusiasm for a lot of people in the community. Got a lot of phone calls, and the word's out.
I bet you must have gotten a big response, because I know of folks who are in the senior ages that are just, you know, they talk about going to hear music and their styles that they really appreciate and everything. Are you going to be having recorded music, a DJ? How are
DJ,
you going to handle the music?
And he's got a good list going of music. We wanted to hit everything, so we went for the 60s, the 50s, the 70s disco. And I think even some of the early 50s and some 40s as well, mm-hmm. because it's for all ages.
Right. That's really exciting. I'm sure they're going to appreciate it. And you say something about you're going to be offering refreshments as well for those.
Yes, we're going to have food, appetizer, finger-type food. There will be wine. Wine will be $5 a glass, but the food will be free, and drinks, soft drinks and iced tea and coffee and lemonade. That'll be all part of the event as well, and that'll be free. And we're going to use the whole building.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Well, there'll be places to sit and relax. There will be places to eat. There'll be places even outside. We have decks where people can sit out. And then, of course, a huge room to dance in.
So how often is this going to be happening?
Well, let's start this one time and see what happens. And I would like to not necessarily, in my mind, I would like to have a dance not that often, but once or twice a year. Mm-hmm. Because I think you can get too redundant, give somebody, people, something to look forward to. But I would like to offer, our whole senior center would like to offer other educational programs, other types of programs for the LGBT community, for them, just for them. Mm-hmm. Movies, maybe. And certainly we have, this month we have a speaker coming, a lawyer who's going to talk about legal issues facing elder LGBT people. And I want to keep that going. I'd like to every month, or if I can't, every other month. It hasn't been easy to find speakers and to find educational programs. So
is that something that you would like to mention to people out there listening, that you are looking for folks who...
I would love to. Yes, I'm looking for people who have a speech or have something that they can give or share knowledge. Also acts, types of music and comedy acts would be fun, too. We have Naomi Metz is coming... July. I'm going to look this up so I can give that. She's going to be here this month, I think in a couple of weeks. Well, July. Let's see if I can find this. July 24th, Aging Safely. It's a legal workshop for LGBT seniors. But anything for seniors would be fun. So I am looking for that, and I want to offer them. I'm doing a lot of research, and I have found some speakers in San Francisco who are willing to come out. And I also have found a few vaudeville shows that I'm thinking about in the future.
That should be exciting for them. So are you going to follow a certain time of the month that this will be offered, or are you just going to randomly have dates for it?
I do want to figure out a date. It'll probably be at the end of the month, every month, and only because it sometimes it takes a while to get the word out, or sometimes a newsletter gets out right on the first. So it's nice to give a little leeway for people. So probably the end of the month, and probably a Friday.
Uh-huh. And so the first event for the senior dance is going to be when?
It's going to be Friday, August 24.
And from what time?
From 5 to 10-ish.
And have you discovered that, is there any particular way that people are going to get there? I know some seniors are not able to drive, and I see you have brought your friend here.
That's
with
right.
You, Dean Brittingham.
That's a good question. Thank you. We do have Dean Brittingham is here. She's our transportation coordinator. And she is also our LGBT consultant, and we have a free ride program for people who are unable to access. They may need to go to a doctor, or they may need to come to the senior center. So I'm gonna let Dean tell you about that.
Thank you, Emily. Our transportation program is 6 years old, and it is for people 60 and over in West County. So we give people rides to basically wherever they need to go, shopping, getting their hair done, doctor's appointments, anything that can get them out. There's a real issue for seniors in general of isolation and depression, and for members of the LGBT community that can be multiplied. So we have our rider program, and we will be offering some rides if people call and request in advance. We usually have a 5 business day requirement for people to call and ask for a ride. So if people want to call, want to go to the dance, and don't have a way to get there and home, we'll see how many people we can handle and help them out so we can get there.
That's wonderful. I know that they have oftentimes night vision and stuff like that comes into play, let alone just driving in general. So that's very wonderful to have that option available. So yeah. With the music situation, I know that a lot of elders have specific music that they prefer to hear. Are you going to have the DJ take suggestions as far as requests, you know, to what music they want to hear?
We are taking requests now, and I have a list. I knew you were going to ask me that question. I have a list. Disco is one of the things that people have. People want disco. That's one of the mentions, 1970s disco. Also, 1960s music. And 1950s. Do you want me to read some of the...
Sure, name a few of them.
Okay, here's a few of them. Let's see what we can come up with. For the 1970s disco, we have... I'm going to try to find some on this list that I actually like. Donna Summer's Last Dance. Staying Alive by the Bee Gees. The 1960s, we've got the Devil with a Blue Dress. Jumpin' Jack Flash by the Rolling Stones, Jimmy Mack by Martha and the Vandellas. Also, he's going to do some romantic slow tunes for couples who may want to have a nice romantic evening that night. 1950, Splash Splash by Bobby Darin. I was singing a lot of these songs this morning when I got my list. Runaround Sue. And let's see, in our 40s, I know in my 1940s, I know he mentioned, I don't have that part of the list, but he did mention some Cole Porters and a few others that are good. We're taking suggestions, too.
So you've been active at the Senior Center for quite a while.
I've been at the Senior Center for 4 years, mm-hmm. and I'm probably hyperactive there, yes.
Yeah, it looks like you do other things besides this music activity that you're getting involved
with. We have a lot of programs. We utilize every room, and our problem is space. But we try to utilize every room and keep programs going from a lot of exercise fitness programs, educational and enrichment programs, history groups, writing groups. What I do as activity director is people let me know what they want, and I'm a senior as well, and I go by a lot of the things that I want too, and in fact I would have to say that I'm involved in about four of our programs. I attend the Pilates class. I play a lot of table tennis at the Senior Center. I'm a member of our Senior Center book club. But so I go by what I like, and also people give me these wonderful ideas, and it's sort of a no-brainer.
So it sounds like because you're going to be using the whole Senior Center that you'll be able to have not only people dancing, but they'll be able to mingle?
Mingle. That's one of the our Senior Center's big, what we try to do.
Mm-hmm.
We try to make it for people to have a nice, comfortable place to meet people. And we've succeeded. Couples have come together through the Senior Center. Friendships have started there, and it's a nice place for people to be. I'm trying to think. Oh, we've had a couple marriages too, and even an LGBT, not a marriage, but a couple came together, and I believe they're still together. So I'm
That's
thrilled
wonderful.
With that. Yes, and one marriage. They've been together for about 3 years now, so it is a place to meet people. In fact. Somebody I was playing table tennis with, I found out that they were dating, and I said, "You guys are dating?" And they said, "Yeah, this is a great place to meet people." So it's a good place to meet people or to be part of a group and to have community, and that's what we try to do. We try to make it very warm, very comfortable furniture, and place to just right downtown. Come on in and sit down and relax and feel at home.
So you, what are the age groups of the folks that come and use the senior center?
Between 50 and 102.
Wow.
We have a man who just turned 102 who's an excellent bridge player. And we have people in their 50s. We have had in some of our programs, of course, we're more or less an adult center, and we have had a lot of people who have been interested in who are not 50, who have come to some of our talks and some to our some of our parties, people in their 30s and even 20s. Some of the high school kids tried to get into our table tennis club, and we wouldn't let them.
A little too fast moving. So you talk a little bit about your proudest moments. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Proudest moment at the senior center?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. I'm just couples, people meeting. I know people going on trips that have met one another, and they're going on, they're doing things together. I'm very proud of those times. And I'm also very proud, really, really proud of when somebody is having a problem, maybe depressed or not feeling well, and people come together as a group and try to help that person. I'm really proud of the community that have at the Sebastopol Senior Center, and I'm proud that I feel I have something to do with it by programming.
So is there anything in the future as far as a bigger space to...
I hope so. We could use bigger space.
So anybody out there who has it,
yeah,
send it your way, huh?
Yes, yes.
So what's the cost of this event going to be?
$8.
Okay.
And it's a donation, and it goes to the senior center.
And are you asking people to let you know ahead of time if they're coming, or...?
We're asking for people to RSVP. That would be nice. However, if you don't RSVP, some people don't decide until the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. Party crashers are welcome.
And for people who don't want to dance but just want to come and socialize, there'll be places where they can sit if they're not dancers.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely.
And what if they don't know how to dance but they still want to come and maybe learn how to dance?
I can teach them. No, we want them to come and feel welcomed, and certainly, you know, nowadays the dancing, and for years of dancing, you don't really have to know how to dance. I think I'm a great dancer, and I've never taken a dancing lesson. I don't know how to dance. But you get up there. I dance whether I have a partner or not. I don't care.
Great. So it's not focused on just couples dancing.
No.
Okay.
No. And it's also open to LGBT and friends. I had a woman who called me the other day who's comes to all of my parties, and she gets up with her walker, and she really moves and shakes and says, "Shake it, baby, shake it, baby." And she's a lot of fun, and she said, "Emily," and she's been ill for a while. And she called and said, "Emily, I'm feeling better, and I'm seeing all these things on the newsletter that I want to attend." And she said, "I want to go to the LGBT dance." And I said, "You know what that is?" She says, "I'm a friend." And so I think she'll be a great asset to the party because she's pretty wild with her walker.
So how do people get in touch with you if they have further questions or to RSVP?
Good question. 829-2440, area code 707, or you can just come on down to the senior center in Sebastopol right next to the library. Our address is 167 North High Street.
Fabulous. Thank you very much, Emily. And this, I'm sure there will be a lot of appreciators out there who just can't wait to get out there and get on that dance floor.
Me too. Thanks, Michaela. Oh.
That's quite all right. Emily, it's great to have you with us as well. And you provided an important service for the community. So I hope that a lot of people are listening to the show tonight and that they respond to your invitation to come to the party, and that it's a good time had by all. So thanks for being with us. I want to say next month on Outbeat Collage, do tune in again as Gary and I talk fashion art with Shauna Ponce and Karen Roberts of Haute Butch. This is a new clothing line of apparel that's specially designed for women who prefer kind of an androgynous masculine edge to their daily wear. We'll have some giveaways. We're going to have some contest news. I'll tell you, these ladies are with it. They're cutting edge, and they're making some real inroads with this brand new fashion design. So do tune in for that particular program. Don't also forget to tune in next week for Outbeat Now with Greg Moralia and Jeff Basham. Again, 8 p.m. here on KRCB Radio. My appreciation this evening to Sunbell for sitting in as my co-host.
Thank you. Welcome.
And I hope you're comfortable sitting back in that chair.
Absolutely. It feels good.
Good. Also to Kenna for bringing you your inspiration, your stories, and your humor. And, of course, Emily and Dean for the service you provide as well.
Thank you.
To my angel of the airwaves, Mary Moore Campagna, for entertaining and engineering this evening. It's been a wild night already. To you, our Outbeat audience, obviously, for spending your Sunday evening with us here at KRCB and being part of the LGBT family. So I'm Michaela Cannon. You've been listening to Outbeat Collage. As always, remember to be real, be remarkable, and do keep a song in your heart. I'll see you next time.
Pray for strength today to stand up and say, move on. Take a deep breath and a first step. Think of what you want to be. When you want something more, find an open door to the other side where suddenly you'll want to. Take a chance.